Chapter 28. Zara.
"What do you mean you're not worried?" I exclaim, looking at each of the elderly mages incredulously. "There's an enemy army sitting on your doorstep." The three members of the cabal eye each other, their demeanor totally unconcerned as they rest easy in armchairs by the fire.
"It's as we said," Ignis replies, sinking back into his cushioned seat. "This is arguably the most fortified place in Tarsinium. It will be impossible for them to break down our doors."
"We helped build the fortifications ourselves," Aldor agrees, bringing a steaming mug of tea to his lips. "They haven't brought enough men to pose an immediate threat. With winter setting in, they'll be lucky to last more than a few weeks before they're forced to retreat."
"That doesn't mean men won't die," I say stubbornly, crossing my arms in front of me. "What good is it to have magic users if they refuse to use their magic?"
"We've done enough already," Ignis reiterates. "We built Dunmar City up to what it is now in all of its glory. Besides, what will three graying old mages be able to do out on those walls?"
"You're still young, girl," Edna says with a wave of her wrinkled hand.
"You jump to conclusions, wanting everything to be done in haste. But we have the advantage of perspective. We don't expect you to understand."
"The only thing I understand," I reply hotly, "is that while you sit here comfortable by your hearth, brave soldiers will be dying by the score, sacrificing their lives to protect you. How can you stand idly by knowing that?"
"Men die in war," Aldor answers soberly. "That's the way of the world, unfortunately. Just imagine if one of those arrows took Edna in the heart. The people would be deprived of a valuable resource in rebuilding the city."
"Speak for yourself," Edna says. "I'm going to outlive the lot of you, and you know it." I force myself to take a calming breath and exhale quietly, trying hard not to let my temper get the best of me. Memories of the Battle of Forest Hill come rushing back, reminding me of how Elva refused to help us defend against the R'hllar. "Their hubris will be their undoing," I think to myself. "They're far too secure inside this accursed mountain." Thoughts gathered, I realize that this is a lost cause. They're not going to change their minds until these underground streets run red with blood of their people. "The real war is with the R'hllar," I say softly, suddenly feeling very sad. "Every loss we suffer here will be a tragedy, and it will mean one fewer human to stand against the demons in the end." The three of them each give me a puzzled look, but I simply bow my head and thank them for their time. As I depart, Edna calls after me, her voice sounding more curious than worried.
"And what are you going to do, girl?"
I walk toward the stairs, not even looking back as I reply. "Anything I can to make a difference." An icy wind rushes down from the snow-capped peaks, ruffling my hair and whipping my robes around me. The air, though cold and biting, helps to calm my nerves as I stare out at the sea of soldiers gathered before Dunmar City, standing atop the wall that has been literally carved into the face of the mountain. I idly play with my talisman, which feels comforting in my hand. With the threat of imminent war, it's good to be close to the source energy, which lies just within reach of my senses. The enemy army, which at any other time would have been an ally to me, has set up camp for the night in an orderly arrangement of tents. Many of them are obscured by the swirling mists of the hot springs, but there are enough in view to give me cause to worry. Campfires glow red in the darkness, their garish flames a sharp contrast to the soft light of the moon and stars. It gives the host a menacing cast, reminding me of the red eyes of the demons I have faced before, the true enemy waiting on the other side of the ark. If they could see us now, they would no doubt laugh at us, I think to myself, pulling my robes more tightly around me. We're doing their bloody work for them. Patrols of watchmen pace the wall behind me, carrying sputtering torches and gazing at the army with careful eyes. Their job is to be on the lookout for a surprise attack, while the rest of the defenders get some sleep in the barracks. Though, just like me, sleep is probably eluding them. I let out a sigh, reaching up and placing the talisman once more around my neck. I'll be the only mage helping to defend the city during the siege. It's important I conserve my energy for only the direst of threats. Still, there will undoubtedly be other things that I can assist with. The wounded will need to be seen to, and the archers will need to be provided with a constant supply of arrows. From what I've read, sieges can be long, grueling affairs. Some sieges over the last millennium have persisted for months, or even years, dragging on until one side either starved or the other was routed by reinforcements. Unfortunately for us, the one thing we all lack is time. Before I left the conclave, Evoker Laramie had indicated that the Ark of Radiance was perilously close to completely failing. Though timing can be difficult to judge with such things, the rate at which the demons have been getting through is nothing short of alarming. It's only a matter of time before the entire might of the R'hllar is brought against us. Sighing in frustration, I turn away from the wall and head back to the stairwell. A figure materializes out of the darkness to my right, forming into a young man with tousled brown hair and a billowing cloak of green and gray. Even though I know him, I can't help but jump as he manages to appear right next to me. "Light almighty, Owen," I hiss, reaching out and hitting him on his shoulder. "You know I hate it when you do that."
"Sorry,"
he replies, trying unsuccessfully to suppress a grin. I huff, brushing a few strands of hair out of my eyes and continuing along the wall toward the stairwell.
"I thought I'd find you up here,"
he says after a moment, falling into step beside me.
"When you weren't at that mage building, I'd figured you'd come out here to get some fresh air."
He knows me so well, I think. Even when he's not living in the woods like a beast, his tracking abilities are uncanny. "And why, may I ask, were you looking for me?" I ask dryly. He falls silent for a moment as the pair of us make our way down the stairs. Then he says softly,
"I wanted to talk to you."
"I'd gathered that much already," I reply, perhaps more sharply than necessary, the mage's objection to participate still weighing heavily upon me. "So, what would you like to talk with me about?" I clasp my hands behind my back as we walk, my posture stiff. He seems taken aback by my perturbed demeanor, but only for a moment.
"I wanted to talk about what you said to me, about letting go of my anger toward Elias and the Nightingales, and myself."
"Oh? And have you had a change of heart?"
"Yes," he replies. "Well, no, sort of. I'm still working on it."
"Take your time," I say sarcastically. "It isn't like we have a battle on the horizon, with imminent death hanging over our heads like a storm cloud. Is that all?"
"I just thought you'd want to know."
I shrug and look out across the dimming lights in the homes around us. We step onto the street and begin making our way back to our shared dwelling, which lies several blocks away from the outer doors. After a few more minutes, he frowns at me.
"Did I do something wrong?"
"I'm sorry," I reply, sighing. "I'm just on edge, thinking about tomorrow. And the Cabal refuses to get involved with the fighting. I'm going to be the only mage out there during the siege."
He grunts. "Figures."
"Figures? Figures what?"
"I only meant that it figures they wouldn't be of assistance."
I mumble out an "Oh," as we round a corner and walk down a wide boulevard
toward the center of the cavern. The streets are uncharacteristically deserted, even for this time of night. It's as if the entire city is holding its breath, anticipating the battle that is to begin in just a few hours. The conversation lulls for several more minutes, the only sounds being our own footfalls on the rough stone ground. I do often wonder how we find ourselves in these situations, I say after a time, passing by a brazier of shimmering blue mage fire. It seems that no matter how hard we try, chaos follows us.
It's almost like we're cursed, or something, he replies, shrugging. Nothing we can do about it now, anyway.
Glancing sideways at him, I can't help but feel a twinge of irritation at his tone. How can he be so casual about this? Doesn't he feel the same? He's spent the last weeks brooding over his master and the nightingales, and now that we face our darkest hour, he's just going to stand there and say there's nothing we can do about it? Well, I say curtly, curses can be lifted. We'll just have to press on and pray for the best.
Zara, I only meant that what is coming tomorrow, it's out of our hands. We can't control the army sitting outside those doors, no more than you can convince those mages to help us come dawn.
Taking a deep breath, I feel my frustration rising at his words, which I guess he meant to be reassuring. I watch his eyes fall downcast as I remain silent. Another lapse in the conversation follows, this one lasting even longer as we continue on our way. I almost find myself wishing I was alone and finishing the duration of the walk in peaceful solitude. Tiredness seems to completely envelop me, and for a brief moment I wish that I could close my eyes and sleep through the entire siege. Finally and unexpectedly, Owen breaks the silence as we round the final corner.
It's going to be a long day tomorrow. We should probably turn in early tonight.
Ahead, I can see our building no more than a dozen paces in front of us. I hurry my pace, eager to arrive quickly and get some much-required rest before morning comes.
We're going to need every advantage we can get, he continues glumly, shoving his hands into his pockets. Not that it'll make a difference in the end.
There's the Owen I know, I mutter under my breath.
What was that?
He asks in annoyance. Apparently I didn't say it quietly enough.
What?
I reply, playing dumb. Oh, nothing.
You can be so infuriating sometimes, you know that?
I can be infuriating? I raise my voice at him, stopping short and jabbing a finger into his chest. I'm not the one brooding for days on end, constantly complaining and angry at the world for everything that's happened to me. That distinction belongs to you, and you alone. His face reddens, but he doesn't appear cowed by my outburst.
How is this about me?
I just came here to...
To what?
I interject.
Comfort me?
You're constantly walking around with a dark rain cloud over your head. That doesn't exactly inspire confidence.
Well, maybe if you didn't have such an easy life, you'd understand how I feel.
You think I've had an easy life? Just because I'm a mage and live in the city? My voice begins to grow even louder, and I suddenly feel like I'm losing control, the words spilling out as if of their own accord. You know nothing of the things I've had to endure. Leaving my family, pushing myself so hard to be the best, becoming the youngest mage at the Conclave, and having everyone still treat me like a child. No, I don't know what it's like to lose my master, but I know what loneliness feels like. The difference between us is that I've never used it as an excuse to close myself off.
His green eyes flash, and the red on his cheeks grows darker. What's that supposed to mean?
I throw my hands up in exasperation. You don't want to let anyone too close because you're afraid, Owen. Afraid that if you let them in, you'll only get hurt again. This seems to strike a nerve. He grimaces as if I'd slapped him, then hardens, his expression growing cold.
Hell, Zara, Can you blame me? You were there when Elias left, when we found out who he really is. What's it to you, anyway? Why do you keep pestering me about this? Why do you care so much?
I take a step closer, my gaze boring into him.
Because I care about you, Owen. I thought that was obvious.
He falls silent, his face becoming an unreadable mask. I cross my arms and look away from him.
Was your intention tonight to just bring around your past woes and then accuse me of having an easy life?
He hesitates, as if searching for the right thing to say, exhaling a deep breath before he speaks.
I came because what you said to me the other night meant something. I care about what you shared. I want to forgive Elias. And besides that, I came because I care about you, too, he says softly.
The anger has left his voice completely.
And I didn't want you to have to walk home by yourself tonight.
My annoyance seems to melt away like snow under the rays of the sun, leaving only surprise at Owen's words. He continues,
I came because I needed to see you one last time before the battle begins. If anything were to happen to you tomorrow, I fear that a part of me may die.
The last of the tension disappears, and I find myself lowering my guard. Uncrossing my arms, I turn to fully face him. Do you really mean that? He glances away, seemingly abashed by the admission.
Well, yeah, he admits. I thought that was obvious.
I stare at him, momentarily taken aback. Hearing him express how deeply he cares, I realize how much our almost kiss from the other night affected me more than I cared to admit. Then, inexplicably, I smile.
You're about as expressive as a stone, Owen Lund, I reply.
Your feelings have not been obvious at all. He shrugs, a hint of a wry smile on his face.
We can't all be perfect, Zara Dennell.
I snort and shake my head, then gesture at the building behind us.
It's getting late. I think it's time we get some rest.
He shakes his head, pointing back toward the entrance to the city.
I'll be staying in the barracks tonight, he replies. They have me on early watch to keep an eye out for a surprise attack.
Ah, I reply, nodding slightly.
True to his admission, it appears he's only here for me.
Then you'd better go. Do take care of yourself, okay? I can't believe I have to come out right and say it, but I've grown rather fond of you. It would be a shame to have to face the R'hllar alone.
He turns to leave, then hesitates, as if on the verge of saying something else. Without warning, he gives me a quick kiss on my cheek. My eyes widen as he backs away, shocked at his sudden display of affection. He bows his head slightly in embarrassment.
Good night, he murmurs,
before turning on his heel and departing. I watch him go, momentarily frozen. Once he's gone, I gaze at the empty street, my heart fluttering. I raise a hand to my cheek and touch the spot where he kissed me, a small, shy smile gracing my lips.
Took you long enough, you great lummox, I whisper to myself, before finally heading inside.